Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss Andor, currently airing on Disney+. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts. Kat Benish is here. Hi, Kat.
Hey, guys. How's it going? I just want to say, I can see where the funeral's coming in the next episode, but the four weddings? Do not know how they're going to pull those together in time.
That's the plot of the next week's episode, is we have four weddings to plan.
Yeah.
Tony Sindelar is also here. Hi, Tony.
Hello, there. It's good to be back.
We are, of course, here to discuss the latest episode of Andor, the penultimate episode of this season.
Good word.
Episode 11, Daughter of Ferrix. We're going to go over some of the plot lines from this week's episode. And there are many, because everything is coming together.
Everyone gets a plot, right? Everyone?
You get a plot, and you get a plot, and you get a plot.
Check under your chairs. There's another plot. Where do we want to start? This was like everyone's coming together to Ferrix.
Should we start with the reason why, which sort of also kicks off this episode?
Savel? No. So, Cassian. Cassian Andor.
Well, I was thinking Marva.
Okay, that too.
Cha-ching. Marva, Cassian's mom, dies off-screen.
Yeah.
Poor Fiona Shaw. Well, Cassian still has no idea.
Is they even cut to Fiona Shaw at the start of this episode when she was still alive, I think. I'm like, man, Fiona Shaw's such a great actress. Like, I hope they keep her around for the second season. Like, because I really need to get more use out of her. That was inaccurate.
So there is a funeral, they're unpacking the house and B2 doesn't want to leave.
Oh,
B2. Sad droid.
Oh, B2. The saddest droid ever.
The saddest droid. Oh. I love the part where he lies about like, oh, I can't leave because I need to recharge.
Yeah.
And Brasso's like, you've been recharging all day.
One night? Just one night?
I mean, this scene is, I like it. It's kind of weird in a meta Star Wars way where, again, why do we think, you know, this is just a thing that's with Star Wars that you have to accept where droids are way more sentient than perhaps they need to be for the roles they play in the various industrial and societal roles they fill, and are then treated like a, you know, non-sentient underclass. Because this is like
a robot
who is grieving, and then you have the Marva's and Cassian's friend who is really treating B2 like a child. And it's like, it's very sad.
I mean, I thought more like honestly, and not to make it better, but like, it felt more like a pet to me. Like
okay.
But again, the sentience does make that weird. But like, the dynamic is like the dog grieving the loss of its owner. It's just like, the dog can talk.
We need you to help. I think they make up something they need him to do, right?
Yeah, that's right. They try to give him busy work. Yeah.
It's really sad. It's really sad. It also makes me question, so who owned the house? So I got the question. No, but seriously. So
it's real estate law. Let's do it.
No. So
Brasso.
New direction.
I try so hard. I try so hard to get all the names. Brasso comes in saying like, hey, you got to come back. I'm going to take B back to my place. The question is like, well, what? They haven't finished packing up the apartment. What happens to it?
I mean, what happens to an apartment when somebody dies?
I guess the question, they sell it off, but is it owned by someone else? Like, these are the questions I had myself wondering while watching this episode.
My generous headcanon, Cat, is like, it's like a council estate kind of deal.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's retired and she's been living there for a while.
Yeah.
And it's a sad industrial planet. And I assume that she is not like super wealthy or she would have gone somewhere else. So in my mind, it's like, oh yeah, it defaults to the local government or back to somebody. So
her story is really interesting because I feel like so much of actually what we are, she doesn't really, her entire appearance on this show, aside from the flashback, she's in the house, all of it.
And mostly in the chair.
Yeah.
And we talk, like some of the most significant things that happened to her off screen. Like, they talk about her, like, wandering around in the tunnels underneath the hotel, which I felt like was foreshadowing, which may still be foreshadowing, but I was like, oh, yeah, she's going to turn out to, like, you know, I don't know, like, martyr herself, essentially, by blowing up the hotel or something. Nope, didn't happen.
I think it's much more showing, like, a tough old bird at the end of her her life and a cold planet, but trying to, I don't know, take whatever she can for something she believes in.
Yeah.
And I think it's so sad that she died without knowing that her son was championing the cause that she's so passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And her kind of last days are I mean, they feel extremely authentic. I don't know how many of you or our listeners have, you know, spent time with an elderly person in their last days. You know, I was just very reminded of my grandmother who lived with my family. And like, you know, that's the sad thing where like, or I mean, I guess it's for inevitable thing where like, you know, your life becomes your world at some point kind of becomes like the place you're living in because you're not leaving it, and then it becomes like the room you're staying in, and then it becomes like the chair or the bed that you're in. And you know, I was kind of curious about like we don't have a death scene here,
right?
No. It happens between episodes off camera, but it's also like, you know, I guess it's a little unclear what she is dying of. Because I mean, she's in old age, but she's also not taking her medication. I think there was a line about that last episode.
Doesn't turn the heat on.
Yeah.
So she's just kind of fading away, and it's like there's not really a dramatic death when you're fading away like that. I mean, it just happens, right? Slowly and inevitably.
I also thought the authenticity, you know, I wanted to say was, I like, again, the show always veers in a slightly different direction, right? Like, I had that moment early on where I looked at, you know, they opened with the funeral and I turned to Kat and I'm like, wait, they're like faking her death, right? Like, this is all part of a plot to get her out. And they're like, no, it's not that kind of show. But like, moreover, the thing with Cassian basically not being there, and those, like you said, not realizing he's part of this cause or that he, you know, was part of Aldani and all that, like the things that went unsaid.
Yeah,
all of that was extremely authentic, right? Like, sometimes this happens, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you're not there when the person that you care about, your parent, you know, passes
Most
away.
Most deaths aren't traumatic.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And still heartbreaking. But,
absolutely, absolutely heartbreaking. And I thought really, really well done. And then I think if we take Marva's scene and then pull back a little bit from that, if you guys are willing to, and then realizing that so much of this is actually seen through Cinta's eyes, where we now know where she is now working in the tea shop, presumably, and fitting in. And I don't know about you guys, but I got a slight sense of some, I think, sadness from this, because I think she realized that Marva was well-respected by the community. She was just like a well-loved older woman. And interestingly, so she's now blended in, and the Imperial spy is like sitting in her tea shop, not blending at all, making like voice memos to himself, who's like the worst spy ever. And she's watching him watching Marva. And it's very interestingly set up about this sort of cat and mouse game where he has no idea that he's in the midst of all this because Cinta is so deep underneath.
And I think with the Cinta thing, what's interesting about that, where I have a suspicion that might go, is she's been sent essentially to kill Cassian because he's a loose end. But and we've seen that she can be ruthless in the Aldani, you know, raid, right? She kills the officer. And she, you know, we know she has like a tragic backstory, but I wonder if seeing the humanization of Cassian, he's just a guy with a mom that died, like, you know, I wonder if that will maybe make her hesitate and think like, wait, like, are we better than the Empire if we're just murdering the people who work for us? I don't know. Like, I think that might give her and Vel pause before deciding, hey, this is a person that we should just be killing in cold blood. Just a theory.
Yeah.
No, I'm also not convinced that Cassian's coming back for the funeral.
I feel like way too many dominoes have been set up for that
to
happen.
I know.
That would be a really weird ending to the show. Like, shows up there looking for Cassian, and he's still on Nyamos, like, hanging out, buying green ones at the convenience store. I just was trying to go to the store, okay?
The Cinta thing is a little weird. I mean, my feeling is they have demonstrated that Cinta is, you know, hardened and so, like, you know, killing people ain't no thing to her. It is, the spy is weird because we went from the spy being like following Cinta from a distance to now like being in the store talking to her and not being a very good spy. I was kind of waiting for there to be some reveal that like the spy was like Luthen's operative keeping tabs on Cinta, but then he makes the spy makes the phone call at the end where it's like, okay, clearly Imperial.
He also shows up in the scene with Bix, but he's in uniform.
Yeah. I missed that.
Yeah, it's weird because like he's wearing his like weird hat. I paused and said like, I think that's the same guy.
Okay.
So he's briefly there too. So yeah, he's definitely the Imperial. But yeah,
I was the other possible twist I was looking for. I don't know why I'm looking for twists, just because that's how my brain works. Was that he might be reporting to a different faction of ISB with Miro's rival, who we maybe doesn't matter to the story anymore, but I was waiting to see if there was some extension there where, you know, I want to say Doc Brown, but the character played that maybe he's reports up to somebody different, but that I'm probably complicating things in a way it does not need to be.
Yeah, I Dan, I hear you're going to with the idea that the twist of like she has him in her sights and she goes to kill him. It's just this zigs and zags, right? Yeah. That's it's not this that kind of show, right? We've got no elements, and that actually feels like a big change of character. I think if Cinta has him in her sights, Cinta's going to kill him.
I just it strikes me as a very mercenary way to act, but it's the fact that it's like there is an irony into killing off somebody, you know, that the. I mean, I guess you're saying you're cleaning up your loose ends and the Empire clearly wants him. So if you kill him before the Empire gets him, that's still thing. But like, there's an argument of being like, but our enemy is the Empire. We should not be killing our friends, even though it is like a strategic goal. But that is the whole thing with Luthen, you know, and certainly we'll talk a little bit more about him. But yeah, it is interesting, right? We've got this whole thing where I think all of these chess pieces are moving into position, and it's going to be a very tense last episode because there's all these factions vying for things. And the question is, to me, can Cassian and like the way that he's evolved and grown in his time in prison, etc., is he going to be able to make the case that like, hey, I am on your side, right? I am not just a loose end and expendable thief to be cleaned up anymore, but like I actually am, I'm down with the cause now. I don't know. I think that's going to be
no
part of the
idea how it's
going
to play out, because you got to do something like that to actually that gets everyone's attention or no one's. And that's what almost like I see the argument like he doesn't. I don't know. I genuinely don't know what's going to happen, and I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Let's cover the Cassian plot. There's not. I mean, there's several scenes, but not nearly as much compared to the all Cassian all the time episode we had before. So Cassian, we pick up with Cassian and Melshi. They're still on Narkeena 5. They're in a place that looks like a Doctor Who episode because it's a quarry.
Yes, it does.
They're hiding from a patrol ship, like clinging to a cliff for a while. And then they find their way to like, I guess it's kind of like a pond that's being dried up where there's some strange aliens, fishing or something, and they have to get.
What do they
onto,
want? They wanted the. They had a word for it. They want the like the squiddies
or
the something.
Something. Yeah.
Wormies?
Not squigs though. No, I was thinking.
Not squigs.
Do they hunt squigs?
Gotta get them from somewhere.
And I feel like this episode, maybe a theme here is this episode is a very. This episode feels like we're gonna put all the Star Wars in this episode to silence
there
are
actual
the people.
In this one.
Yeah, you got aliens. You got other things we'll mention later, but like aliens, too big. I think they were different species. They had slight different physical builds, so kind of similar shapes. I don't know if it matters.
The subtitles I think suggest these are the natives to Narkeena 5.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah.
So I think they call them Narkeenians or something. I don't know, but like it seems like the point is they're the native. You know, like species to this planet, and as we discover, like basically the Empire is screwing over their planet too, which is unsurprising because that's what the Empire does.
And I loved it. And keep going, Tony. Sorry.
There's a weird. This is one of the places I stumbled a bit in the episode, which you know happens a bunch. So Melshi and Cassian, I'm forgetting which one of them. One of them basically says, "Let's go for it," and they're running toward the ship with the plan of basically grabbing the ship and flying away. And the locals have like a thing that basically shoots out like a spider web at both of them.
But like
and
seaweed they have, web, it was weird.
And they have kind of a conversation between the two of them slash kind of with them about like, well, we obviously these. Two are from the prison and we know what the price is for the prison, but also we don't like the Empire. And I was unclear if like Cassian and Melshi convinced them or they just kind of convinced themselves that it's like that money is not
themselves.
Worth it to us. Okay.
Well,
that was your reading of it.
We watch it with subtitles. Mm-hmm. And I would say two things on that. One, very interesting that I want to go back and rewatch it, but the way they speak, again, I think we often get like the alien dialogue and they come back, but again, recognizing that I think we have Melshi and Cassian speaking what it was, common basic is what we call it in this universe, but they go back and forth between basic and their own language, and they're basically constantly switching, almost like you would get like
code switching,
so, when you see like a Bollywood movie is back and forth in English and in Hindi. Mm-hmm. That was like I was like, oh yeah, it would be much more like that. And yeah, they either I think they basically convinced themselves. I kind of feel like they kind of were going to let them out the entire way, and they're just kind of being jerks to them, like to use them along and having fun. And it was interesting because one of them spoke Basic, the other one didn't speak Basic.
Mm-hmm. Or wasn't choosing not to, I guess.
Yeah. It's a very interesting, like, will they or won't they? And they, it was unexpected, but yeah.
Yeah. It felt like it turned really quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, I was kind of like, are we going to have to do a whole plot of them, like, convincing these people? That seems like a lot of time to invest in, you know, what is kind of a... I had thought maybe, honestly, last week, they're like, are we just going to elide over how they get off the planet? Like, it's not that important. And I was like, in the end, it's not. But I think it, they tried to pull out some sort of, you know, resonance there between, obviously, what the Empire's done here and what they've done in other places, including Canary, right? And sort of harkening back to Cassian's youth.
And I think just show pockets of rebellion everywhere and people rebel in different ways. I also want to contrast those guys to, they reminded me, I mean, not all aliens, but the alien.
Hashtag not all aliens.
Who was the guy who drove Obi-Wan and
Frick?
Frick.
Yeah, Frick.
Reminded me a bit of Frick.
Though Frick was a collaborator, right?
Exactly.
These two kind of were on the fence maybe, but then they're like, nah.
It reminded me of, what's his name? Unkar Plot from Force Awakens, the guy that Rey works for.
What a portion.
Anyways. But they do, I mean, you know, hey, Tony Gilroy has heard your message loud and clear about not enough aliens in Star Wars. He's here to fix that problem for you.
One more, let me make it clear, which again was kind of a weird thing that, like, I feel like wasn't really in Star Wars canon until Star Wars Rebels, where it's like, oh yeah, the Empire is the Empire. Like, all those Star Destroyers, we had to strip mine hundreds of planets in order to do that. And you didn't see that because Tatooine's already a desert. Hoth and Dagobah are not prime real estate, but hundreds or dozens or hundreds of other lovely planets have been destroyed in order to build Star Destroyers and guns and all, you know, the entire infrastructure of the Empire. So let's just remind you of that one more time before they escape Narmina 5 and make it to vacation land again.
I mean, to that
which
point,
is now in its off season, by the way.
Well, to that point, I think it's always really interesting. I mean, the point that Hoth and Tatooine and Dagobah, I mean, the rebels all go places where it's like, hideouts. There's no resources for it, like, because they're out in the middle of nowhere for a reason, right?
Yeah.
Like, we are hiding, and also these are the only places that are left. We have that little plot. The ship they're going to take, by the way, is a quad jumper, which appears in a couple other places, including in the background of a Mandalorian episode early on, and most notably also in The Force Awakens at Unkar Plots. That's the ship Rey and Finn are going to take before it gets blown up, and then they take the Falcon instead. There's a little Star Wars deep cut.
And then they end up on vacation land, which we believe we looked up. It's filmed in...
It's in, like, Blackpool area. It's Bristol? I don't remember. It's somewhere in the
southern UK.
Yeah, British shoreline.
But clearly, the off season people are gone. But he's able to sneak back into the hotel, find his money and gun, and then
in that same box, Nemec. What is it? The grad student.
The manifesto lives on. I loved that.
Well,
I love that.
I wondered about that because when he meets with Melshi by the shore. He goes to hand him something, and he's like, is he going to hand him the manifesto or a gun? And it's a gun.
Not money, though, which I love.
No.
Never change, Cassian.
I don't know you that well.
Also, Melshi has one line he says maybe four times. People have to know.
People have to know.
We should split up, essentially, so that people can find it. Like, people need to know what happened on the prison. Yeah.
I love...
Are we the only two that survived?
A tiny thing, but Melshi is, they change from their prison jumpsuits, and Melshi is wearing like a Space Hawaiian shirt.
Terrible
and
clothes.
He looks so uncomfortable in it.
I love it.
Right?
It's really good.
I mean, it's funny because it's like, you've been walking around in a prison jumpsuit, but he looks like he just looks physically uncomfortable in his fake vacation costume.
Because it's so cobbled together from like various, it's like almost pajamas, but also
but
Hawaiian
clearly they
shirt.
Just bought like whatever convenience store is there. Like,
yeah, whatever was in the airport.
Yeah, you're like,
sorry,
let me go to safety.
Sorry, spaceport.
You gotta go into the spaceport in your white jumpsuit and
maybe
this
those
is just
guys
a fashion
on the
choice.
Yeah, maybe the guys on the quad jumper are like, here, we have some leftover human garb,
from the humans we didn't let go.
Well, it's an interesting question, actually. Do we think it's the off season, or do we think that because of the Empire's activities, people are no longer going, the people are beginning to shut down?
I think there's an argument, maybe, though. I mean, that hotel room is clearly occupied,
I guess,
right?
That's true, yeah.
But the beach is empty, right? They're on the beach, and it's the same beach where he, like, there was a crowd of people before, and it's just empty, right?
There's one, like, there's, like, one CGI bird.
Yeah, there's a space bird there, space parrot.
Space seagull eating people's sandwiches.
Do we think we'll see Melshi again anytime soon?
I would not be surprised to see him pop up next season, but I think he's done for this season. That's my
We did
guess.
Get another... Alien count. They threw an alien in the room for Cassius.
Two aliens.
Oh,
were there two? Okay.
Yeah. Birds,
kind of squid looking.
Two love
not Quarren,
squids.
But yeah.
I also love the, I wonder if our younger viewers even know what those were, but they were essentially payphones.
Yeah.
that Cassian calls.
Yeah.
I did wonder a little bit about the ability to transmit messages across in real time across the galaxy. I mean, we've seen it with holograms before for military use, but apparently the 2D version is available just on the corner for calling people across, you know, across space systems.
It raises the question of like how far away he is from Ferrix, because like we know, jumping back to, we didn't really talk about Pix and the fact that they decide to allow the funeral to happen because they want. What do
they want
it to
trap. They want the trap. There's the whole, like, we want to get them in the box. Do they use the word box? We all want them all in one room, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they, so when Brasso talks in the payphone booth, essentially, to Cassian.
No, it's not Brasso. It's another guy. It's Zan.
It's the other guy.
Oh, it's not? Yeah. That was Brasso.
Nope. So we saw him also in the first couple episodes. It's some other guy he's,
It's the other Ferrix guy that he, yeah, it's... God, I remember his name, Kat, but like, yeah, it's the other guy.
I think he says the name when he knew it.
Viewers can probably tell my voice that I'm a little sick. Like, it's been a rough week. It's been a really rough week.
I mean, he's part of the greater people that that Cassian is Mustafa of Ferrix.
But
there's one
back.
Other. There's the guy
he's
who owns that shop. I think that's true.
Oh no, the guy who owned that shop ended up bad. Puck. That was the guy who got.
Oh, I was thinking. Sorry, shop. I was also thinking of. There's the guy that in the first episode. Or second episode, he hires the big blue alien to kind of intimidate.
Oh, right.
Cassian. So sorry, I don't know if they all have names, but I'll wait till the action figures are released.
Okay, so not Brasso, but his friend calling the payphone. But it could be no later, I guess, than the afternoon that Marva passed away, and the funeral's in 2 days. Like, so does he have enough time to get back from the tourism planet to Ferrix for the funeral?
This is not worth worrying about.
This is, yeah, okay.
The answer is yes, if the plot demands that he be there.
This is like Game of Thrones in the later seasons when like, suddenly they're able to travel everywhere very fast.
I don't think Star Wars has ever cared about it that much, though. Like, it's always been the speed of plot, basically. I think that's just the way the...
Which I find slightly frustrating, but it's fine. I'll let it go.
How far is Alderaan from Tatooine? They get there in like 2 hours.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, was there anything else on casting we want to talk, or do we want to move to Coruscant?
Well, other than the disruption, I've seen a lot of people criticizing Cassian, saying that going back to Ferrix is stupid, which probably, yes, but at the same time, it's like, it's your mom's funeral. Like,
yeah, it's your mom's funeral? Do people not have families?
Yeah, that's kind of that was my argument. But people were like, well, if I knew that going there would endanger everybody who was there, I was like,
but he doesn't know that.
But he doesn't know that, right? Yeah,
he doesn't know that.
He knows that it was bad. I mean, he knows he probably shouldn't, because when he goes to see Bix gives him a hard time. But like, he's also...
And he's been now in jail for like a couple of months. He does not think there's still a galactic manhunt looking for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's oblivious to that. He thinks that he is a fugitive from prison, but also in pointing his column, there's dozens, maybe hundreds of other people on the run from Narkeena 5. I think he is totally oblivious to the fact that, like, oh yeah, there's the Aldani matter is still like an open case file.
Right.
Oh yeah. Oh, that got done. You know, we took the money and we ran, and I'm sure they forgot about the Empire doesn't care about us.
He has nowhere else to go.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
He has no people. He has no ship. He's got a box full of money, a gun, and a manifesto. He's like, and
of my memoir, Tony.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, so here
the name of your memoir is a manifesto. Includes a manifesto. There's like a book within a book.
Yeah, it's colon.
Yeah,
a box.
Colon.
A box full of money, a gun, colon, a manifesto.
I have many questions. Okay. I will say that would be an amazing ending to the next episode. Is like with their excellent editing. Everyone's at the funeral. You see Cassian's coming. Cassian gets off the ship, and you realize he's on Canary, and everyone else is back on Ferrix.
I thought you were going to say he's on Tatooine. Finally, we bring it back around.
Finally. This you know what this show is really lacking? Sand. Is it really a Star Wars show without sand?
We had a lot of water. We had a lot of trees. I don't know. Yeah, so I guess, I mean, yeah, I think Cassian's going back. We got to have a flashpoint here. This is sort of the... I feel like there's echoes of essentially episode 3 back when he and Luthen are getting off the planet, off Ferrix, right? Like, this feels very much like, but we've raised the stakes because it's not just the stupid corporate security guys who are playing soldier. It's actual soldiers. So this is bad news. Mm-hmm. So I'm intrigued to see where that goes.
Speaking of corporate security and phone calls and space phone calls. That's a transition, people.
Cyril Karn gets woken up by his mom, who tells him he has a phone call.
Yeah.
And then hangs around to listen to it.
Yep.
Which is our pal, Sergeant Mosk, from the first couple episodes, who is now working in a mine on Morlana.
I like the payphone. Wherever he's calling from is like in the smelter. It's like there is no break room on this planet. It's like there's not like a room with lockers. There's just like, no, there are literally sparks and like industrial machinery like over his shoulder.
I also enjoy that his entire conversation is not understanding a word that Karn says to him, and he's is having his own conversation.
That's very apropos for like who he was as a character to in the beginning of like, I'm just going to completely ignore this kid and get what I want done.
Yeah.
And force him into this.
But he has some weird loyalty to him to be like, hey, I heard this and I thought you'd want to know.
Mosk, my interpretation is Mosk is like an incompetent true believer, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Mosk is he's your cop that's not, he's not corrupt, but he also like he's in it for the power trip, and that you know, and so he can't be corrupted or bribed, but he's also bad at his job, right? Like he would never take a bribe, but he would also fall asleep in his squad car on duty, right? And you know, I mean, I think it's he's portrayed as kind of physically over the hill and, you know, not an athletic dude, but also, you know, back in the episode where he and Karn were organizing the raid, he's clearly very into the like the violence and
the pomp and the military playing soldier.
And, and he's a mall cop, right? He's not actually
You know who he reminds me of? Do you guys ever see Ashes to Ashes?
Yeah. Yeah, but you're thinking of
the main jerk in Ashes to Ashes.
The main character.
Yes.
What's his?
Well, the main character is
Gene. I forget now what's his name.
I'm blanking.
It's Robert. No, Philip Glenister.
Glenister,
who's related to the guy
Robert Glenister, the guy from Hustle. Yeah. They're brothers.
Yeah.
His name is Gene. Oh my God.
Thing he plays like a 1970s British
Gene
cop
Hunt.
Who's like
Hunt.
A How little who's a little bent.
Yes. But yeah. Everybody is.
But
that kind of,
is.
That's what I kind of get the impression from Mosk. Like, he's just like...
I think Gene Hunt is a better person than Mosk, perhaps, but that's...
I feel like Gene Hunt's main person... Sorry, this is now our Ashes to Ashes sub-podcast. If you are looking for a podcast about a time travel show, sort of, from 2008, you have come to the right place, listeners.
A sequel to another time travel show.
Yeah.
They're both really good. Life on Mars and Ashes to Ashes, highly recommend.
Yeah.
They're not what you think, but they're really good. No. They're time traveling cop shows.
Yeah. Part of the time traveling dad universe. Mainly I got confused because I think of Gene Hunt's major character trait as just misogyny. More so, yeah. I was like, oh yeah, he's got a corrupt too. But anyway, that is a BBC show from 15 years ago. I don't know.
I know.
We got old.
I torrented it years ago.
Statute of limitations. That probably. Up.
Yep. You're good. You're good.
Anyway, moving along.
So Karn decides in the middle of the night that Mosk is telling him that Cassian, they're having a funeral and hoping to lure Cassian back, so this is your chance. Which Karn is like, yes, I'm going to then steal my mom's piggy bank, essentially.
Yep.
Go into the family jewels, steal her what look like, I guess, their credits.
Yeah.
Credit cards, credits. Once she's left the house, and then presumably buy passage to Ferrix.
Right. He's not going to work. He's dressed like he's going to work. He clearly goes out in the morning like, I'm going to my job, and then hides around the corner until she leaves.
Karn, what is your end game? If Cassian doesn't come, you can't go back to your mom. You have no future.
Karn is like 4 YouTube videos away from being a January 6th participant.
4? I think it's fewer than that.
Okay.
He's still an interesting character. And all the Tony Gilroy interviews where they talk about him are kind of fascinating because he's like, I don't think he's necessarily like a straight up fascist. And you do still feel like there's a way for it. Like, I don't quite. I don't think he knows who he is. I think that's the problem. Is he like, he has these aspirations, but they're really vague. And he's like, he's got that, like, you know, freshman in college level understanding of how the world works. And it's just like, oh, kid. Okay.
Dan, he is back from Thanksgiving break and he is ready to tell people about what he's figured out about the world. And just you listen, you uneducated simpletons.
So what is the plot verbi? Like, he goes to Ferrix and joins the rebellion. Like, was that what you're thinking? Or like somehow he pulls Cassian out and like...
I think I still maintain that I think he gets put in a position where he has to make a choice.
Yeah.
And the question is, will he realize that the Empire is not actually what he is looking for?
Yeah.
And I don't know, but yeah.
I mean, that the whole, you know, what makes the show in my brain compared to The Wire again and again. So this is our Wire reference for the show, for today's episode as required
check.
By law.
All right.
Check. I mean, it's all about how are people kind of compromised or changed by the institutions or causes that they throw in with, you know, I mean, that's certainly where you're seeing Cassian changed as he is on, you know, the organization. The rebellion is a more of an ideal than an organization. Mon Mothma is also clearly on that path. Miro and you know, how she feels about the Empire. You know, it's basically the collision between your ideals / what you believe about the world and like. The way that actually happens in reality, given the kind of messiness of organizations with people. And Karn is some kind of true believer in terms of justice and law and order. And he's already had that kind of trampled by his failed career as a corporate security guy and his collisions with the Empire. Because it's like, if you believe this much in law and order, and the organizations that you want to be part of were also believer in law and order, why are you on the outside looking in? Why are you stuck at a desk monitoring fuel quality? Right? Like, obviously, either you're wrong or the organizations are flawed. And so, yeah, I mean, I think something has to happen here. It is very weird to me that Tony Gilroy keeps saying, like, oh, he's not a fascist. And I don't know. I mean, maybe that's because he knows where the story ends and we don't. Or... he is just likes to toy with people to get them to play with that a little bit because he wants you to think about him instead of because he's more complicated than that. Yeah, I don't know if Karn's gonna end up camped out on Yavin 4 or if he goes back to a quiet life, but I feel like he is not gonna be putting in fuel reports at the end of the day.
Or he ends up dead at the end of this.
Dead,
I think
or
he's just all dead. These characters except for Cassian can die at the end of the next episode.
Yeah.
And Melshin.
They're going to kill all of them. Melshin. They're going to kill all of them.
All of them? There's so somebody accidentally sent a bomb to the funeral.
Oh, Mon Mothma also needs to survive.
Mon Mothma needs to survive. Yeah. Probably.
Everyone
unless
she's
replaced
by
a body double. It's going to be good.
Saw Gerrera also.
Oh, Saw Gerrera has to survive too. Oh, never mind. This list is too long now.
Tubes, who I didn't know his name before.
That was great.
Sorry.
Yeah. I was going to say the character, not to go too far into your Wire analogy, but he reminds me a little bit of Roland Przybylowski.
I was going to say Przybylowski. Yeah. I mean, who
kind of looks like him too, I think is the issue.
He does. Yeah. Well, you know, and he's like, you know, white dude, dumb looking young white dude. So on The Wire, to complete our Wire segment, Roland Przybylowski is the kind of idealistic cop who joins the Baltimore police force and gets in way over his head, thinks he's a tough guy and perhaps falls. I guess he's impressionable and he gets impressed upon by some cops who basically say the wrong people who use violence and intimidation to try and get to law and order. And it doesn't work out. And he has kind of a life-changing moment when he badly injures like a juvenile guy who's, you know, basically mouthing off to him, and he badly like maims.
Pistol
whips a kid who loses his eye. Oof. And I forget if he gets fired or is given the opportunity to leave. There's also the thing where he's like the nephew of somebody important and shouldn't have the job he has. And he ends up being a school teacher and like basically trying to like spend the rest of his life making right on the fact that, you know, he used violence to horrible means, and trying to make Baltimore a better place. And that actually, in the case of him, the place where he can do the most good for Baltimore is in a classroom. So
I could see Karn potentially going down that path, but I guess the question is, he has to be confronted by something that is so jarring and shocking. And I think the best thing I can see is basically is the torture of, like, say, Bix.
I was thinking the same.
But again, the challenge there is he needs to be convinced that Bix wasn't innocent, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know
if he buys that. And I don't know who believes it.
Remind me from the raid. I'm calling it a raid. When Karn brought that whole squad to Ferrix, and he has all these not quite soldiers at his disposal. Did Karn do anything violent himself?
Did he
shoot anyone or
no? I think he tries at one point, but he basically Luthien gets a drop on him.
Yeah.
Because I think of him as like his role is kind of like. Like, he's the detective, the investigator, right? And he is not, doesn't necessarily... I'm just wondering what his taste for violence is. I could see him basically...
It doesn't strike me as someone who is, the rest of them, using violence for, like, oh, I'm really into the violence and the... Yeah.
And I don't know the story we're going with this. I could imagine a Star Wars show where we followed Karn on his failed investigation and his demotion, and he's in the fuel thing, and then he gets a phone call, and he goes off on his own, and he spends, you know, his life savings buying a gun and some zip ties and gets to Ferrix, and, like, Cassian is like, who are you, and shoots him in the face before he gets to say a word.
I don't think Karn's going to survive next episode. I think Karn is dead.
I think there's more gas in that.
Oh, this is the first time I think Karn dies, and this is the first time a character's going to die.
I think I'm a cat. I'm in your box. I don't think Karn lives past the next episode.
Yeah, which would be unfortunate, but I think that's where it has to go. Do you guys want to switch to Coruscant?
Yeah.
Talk about Mon Mothma and Vel, and then maybe work our way over to Luthien.
Yeah, so we get a little bit more from Mon Mothma about how she found herself in these dire straits that have required her to implied that she has sort of taken up Davo Skulden on his offer or is strongly considering it.
We also get heavy hints that her daughter is open to an arranged marriage.
She's sort of into the traditional
values. Yeah, that was kind of a weird thing to drop in here. I guess it shows the kind of diverging of
I think
Mon
the
and her daughter
between the mother and daughter is what I took that as is getting further and further, and it also is maybe Mon Mothma being able to rationalize and forgive herself for the decision she makes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, possibly gives her an excuse even if it's still not a good one.
I think before Vel shows up to talk to Mon, does she go to the antique shop and talks to Clea. And they have that weird, like, which of us is higher ranking in this terrorist organization conversation.
Yeah.
Where's the org chart?
And we have Clea do her own version of the speech of everything I've sacrificed. And it's basically, she's going there to give the information that Marva is dead.
Right? Yeah.
Right.
That's the information of House Long, which means, I think that basically telling Luthien and everyone that Ferrix is a hotspot.
Right. I mean, it's part of the general everybody to Ferrix next episode setup. The death of this character spreads far and wide, right? It's being discussed in both the parallels of it's being discussed in Rebel and Imperial meetings.
Yeah, everyone's after Cassian, and Cassian has no idea.
Should we mention ISB too briefly? We did mention that let the funeral go ahead.
Yes.
They talk about that. We also get the discussion of the funeral rites. Which I thought was an interesting touch.
Oh, I love that. That was fantastic.
They're cremated and turned into brick.
And then they found a wall for them. And just like, again, how utilitarian and industrial the city is.
And the fact that it's literally built on the blood and bodies of the people, right? Like, that is you can't escape it even in death, right? Yeah. Like, that is your lot in life. Like, you live here and, you know, you are consigned to this. And that might be good or bad. You may have ties with this area, but it's also... you are stuck here.
But also, it's like there's a utility to your life and that you're built on, your life is built on the, effective impact on others, right?
Right.
That you have to rely on others too. So there's a good message there that I think creates that why we see that everyone wanting to drop everything and start doing the pounding and the bells and the that episode three with Cassian, even though everyone's like Cassian's a mooch, but like he's one of us, so we're going to protect him. And that,
this is all you've got.
This is, that ties back to like, yeah, and that's why when you die, you two will add to the walls to help support everyone who goes after you. So I love that. I thought it was a really, really great touch.
Well, it also sets the scene for the radicalization of Ferrix, right? Because it points out this is a tightly knit community.
Exactly.
And there is a point at which that we saw Ferrix sort of in fear, you know, in the early episodes, but there's a point where that tips over to anger and taking up arms against them, right? And I think that's kind of where, you know, the funeral puts that on a knife's edge, right? It could easily, like, if the Empire is cracking down, it could easily spawn a rebellion there, because it's like, this is such a tight-knit community that's all about the people in it, and they might just decide, hey, we've had enough.
And we've seen that in the real world where, you know, funerals become touch points for political and social violence in terms of are you allowed to have the death rites for a person or not? And the,
are they respected? You know, it's interesting, too. Echoes back to Aldani, too, right? We had the entire, those local rites as well being a major key touch point. So it'll be interesting. Yeah. I did want to say one thing with Mon Mothma, just going back real quick. I did find interesting Mon Mothma was opening up to Vel, and Vel was asking her if she'd gone to Luthen, Mon Mothma saying no. And it does raise the question of, had Mon Mothma gone to Luthen, again, all she needed was 400,000 credits. They stole 80 million. Where did those credits go?
Yeah, I mean, assuming they buy a lot of X-Wings and Y-Wings for Yavin or whatever, right? Yeah. Like, you gotta fund your rebellion somewhere.
This was one of the first conversations I felt like about the rebellion that in a long time that was like honest between two characters, right? And I mean, I guess it helps that they're sisters, but even these two characters had discussions about the rebellion before where it's like, they're not talking, right? And, you know, Mon still doesn't know that Vel was part of Aldani, but, and we have this tension here that like, Vel is in, they're both part of the resistance in different ways, and Vel knows that there's a pile of money somewhere that would solve at least part of it would solve her sister's problems and
potentially prevent
Leia.
So speaking of honest conversations, should we talk about the dynamic showdown between Saw and Luthen? Because that was a great scene.
Anytime you put Stellan Skarsgård and Forest Whitaker in a scene together, I feel like it's just, that's just some A-plus stuff there. Do you want to talk briefly about our the conspiracy theories afoot?
We got two great emails on this one.
Luthen gets patted down at one point, right when he's coming in, and they pull out one thing that looks
like a wooden lightsaber,
suspiciously like a wooden lightsaber.
But do you want to throw both emails?
Yeah, we have a couple of emails about this that people were asking. So let me pull those up. The first one was from Fabian, listener Fabian, who was talking last week's episode about Luthen's speech and about how it presages Luthen sort of falling to the dark side. It's like not just he's got the look of it, right? Like he's standing outside the lift with the black cloak, and he points out it sort of echoes Vader in Cloud City. And Fabian says his speech basically lists all that Luke refuses to do in Return of the Jedi to avoid falling to the dark side. You know, he talks about being damned for what I do, my anger, my ego, my unwillingness to yield, my eagerness to fight. I'm condemned to use the tools of my enemy to defeat them. And he talks about Yoda saying anger, fear, and aggression are the dark side. Fabian writes, Luthen is falling and his fall will only accelerate. I'm very curious to see where that leads. A conflict between Luthen's dark side rebellion and a light side, maybe against Mon Mothma, or a very new to Star Wars statement that sometimes you need to fight fire with fire.
Yeah, I thought that was a great point, Fabian. I had not picked up the words, but I think it is. And this is where it gets a little tricky, because I think a lot of the writers purposefully don't know Star Wars as well as, say, previous writers. So it's unclear if this was done unintentionally or intentionally, echoing so clearly the words and the tools of the dark side. But the image, is spot on. Fabian's spot on. He's like standing on that gangway in that black cloak. And he could very much pass for, had Luke Skywalker gone a different way. And it's, I don't know. But then you contrast that black cloak with Mon Mothma wearing the pure white. That has to be intentional, showing those two. And again, I think so much of the show is showing about the different motivations of the rebellion and the different actions of the rebellion. And I've got to imagine the next season is really about the tensions that arise because of that. Because when we get to Rogue One, the different parts of the rebellion are still not working together.
Which is fascinating too, because I think Luthen is his motivations are very pure in the sense that they are unadulterated by anything else. He is totally into the way
ends
that
and
he
means,
is doing
my
it.
Friend, ends
yeah,
and means.
Like that's exactly what it is. And like he's like, oh, I'm not concerned about any of those things. This is the right thing to do, and this is how I do it. And he's not like, tempered by anything else. Whereas, Mon Mothma is still sort of wrestling with, can I maintain my current life? How do I maintain my appearance of propriety while also funding the rebellion? Am I going too far? Like, she is much more in doubt, right? Luthen has no doubt about anything that he is doing.
And he's willing to sacrifice anything.
Yes.
And, we had, as part of his speech last episode, I think he named a number of years since he had been.
That's right.
Some people were trying to do the math on what that means. I mean, I think it pegs it to somewhere toward the end of the Clone Wars, right? And it's like, did he see younglings get murdered in the Jedi Temple? Did he see clone troopers get murdered by somebody else or clones turn on the Jedi? But clearly it seems like he saw something as opposed to like he read a book that changed his life.
Have you heard of my friend Nemec and his manifesto?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And I think we talked a little bit last episode about whether or not Luthen was a Jedi. I think we pretty quickly dismissed it. That being said, I think we got a great email.
Yeah, we also got an email from Bill who says, okay, it sure seems like they're putting a lot of Luthen is a Jedi hints in the show. What do you think?
At least in this one episode. Yeah.
Is it too heavy-handed and therefore a red herring? Is he just a Jedi fanboy? And then he bullet points, keeps a kyber crystal, has Darth Maul double lightsaber things on his ship. carries a thing that looks a lot like a lightsaber into his meeting with Saw. I mean, I sure hope he's not a Jedi. I'm enjoying the generally non-magic vibe of the show.
And he has like a bunch of holocrons in his...
Which I brought up to you, Kat, when we were talking about it off the air, about like even collecting that stuff seems incredibly dangerous, right? Like they're trying to purge the entire existence of the Jedi.
I think it's set designers just put them in the background not knowing.
And
like,
you're having a shop on Coruscant where it's like, I sell Jedi memorabilia.
Replicas,
get your Jedi t-shirts here.
Replicas.
I did notice,
replicas.
I think in this episode there was a mask of the Jedi guards.
The temple
from the,
guards. That's been there
the
for
temple.
A couple times.
Okay,
yeah.
That's been there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tricky because some of that Tony Gilroy has even said like, oh, I had no idea. That's just the set directors having fun. Yeah. And there's artifacts, I believe, from one of the Indiana Jones
there
movies
are,
and things
there
like
are.
So some
from,
of that
a couple
is
things from Rebels to
some of them they're replicas. On the backside they say proudly made in Coruscant.
Exactly.
Or Tatooine.
that's my voice.
I can't imagine Palpatine being like, but you can sell replicas merchandise.
Well, Dan, maybe in some ways it's like putting it in a museum, making it a memento is like part of like it's dead, right? It trivializes it. I don't know.
Right,
generous headcanoning.
I'm throwing it out. Is Luthen stick a lightsaber? Yes, no.
Everything is point. Like I forgot about the kyber crystal. Right, the kyber crystal and the wooden lightsaber together.
I mean, they make a lightsaber if you put them together.
I don't want this to become a Jedi show.
Yeah.
But I do like the idea. So we do see in the Obi-Wan show, right, that Obi-Wan has stopped using his powers as part of hiding, right? So I could see Luthen essentially just break off all attachment to the Force in order to fight, because that's how he survives, right? Because otherwise he's going to get hunted down by Inquisitors.
That's basically what Kanan did, too.
Yeah. Right?
Also, thinking about Ahsoka, who is like,
yeah,
I'm not
yeah.
a Jedi.
Sure.
Right?
So I could see it that he is that, and yes, that he is flirting with the dark side, as Favian pointed out, and that he is a former Jedi, but he can't use his powers. It's too dangerous. Mm-hmm. And so he fights without them, right? That could be interesting. That could be a really interesting that it's not a Jedi, but a former Jedi who now uses these more mundane tools to fight the war.
It's weird to me that we have all these things in this episode. And I don't know, it's like I'm of two minds. It's like, we have a space battle in this episode. I don't think we've had anything like that in quite a while.
Nope.
And it's like, there's the part of my brain that's like, yeah! And then there's the part of my brain that's like, I didn't really need that. Like, that's great, but like, show, you were doing a pretty good job. You didn't need to drop in a space battle at episode 11 to you know, to pull me in. I had already bought the ticket. Like, I'm on the ride. You don't need to get me in anymore. I mean, it's weird because it makes me ask all these kind of questions about, for example, why is he walking around with a wooden tube when his kyber crystal is on, is still with Cassian, I believe, or actually,
no, Cassian gave returned it back to Vel. Yeah.
Vel. And did Vel give it back to him?
Yeah,
we didn't see it, but we can assume
Vel
so,
Luthen,
I think so.
Yeah. We haven't seen
it. Okay, because if it's not a lightsaber, why is he walking around with a wooden tube and bringing it to a dangerous meeting? Yeah.
Well, they said that it does show up earlier in the episode, when 2 or 3, when he's on Ferrix. I think people said he is carrying it then too, and they described it as a walking stick, but I don't, like a collapsible walking stick. I don't know. I'm not really sure. I kind of lean against him being a Jedi. I was kind of curious if this is going to be our first like Star Wars, you know, TV movie property that doesn't have a lightsaber get ignited in it, and they're really down to the wire with that.
Well, everyone is very excited about, we have the space battle, so let's just remind you of the space battle. Is this after he's left Saw's planet?
It's after he's left Saw, yeah.
He's left Saw's planet, he's in orbit, a small kind of Imperial cruiser with a bunch of satellite dishy things on it shows up and wants to scan him and wants to board him because they need the practice, and they put him in a tractor beam, and we discover that his ship has some very powerful, his ship has like foldy bits and is like super powerful and has a variety of countermeasures, from basically like a bag full of ball bearings that we shoot at your tractor beam to things that look like lightsabers that stick out of the side that we have not seen on other ships before, that people were like, what the what, when that happened. I mean, I think that was what I
was cool.
Like, yeah,
it was very cool. I liked it.
Yeah,
I mean, it certainly seemed space battle. I mean, I'm a space battle fan, so I'll start with that. But I also enjoyed the befuddlement of the like Imperial captain, who's just like, it's like pulling over a car, and then that car is like a transformer.
Yes.
Well, also, like, they kept it was nice that when they closed on the shot, they just like stayed on him several beats longer than they needed to, him of just being like,
I have so much paperwork to fill out.
Well, and even the shot, he's framed by the two stormtroopers who are standing on the bridge, like witnessing his incompetence. And it's the classic for this show, the Imperials are overconfident and arrogant.
Exactly.
Right? Like, they think that they have the ship in a tractor beam, they're gonna board it for fun, his misery is nothing to them, and it's like, actually, you probably just got fired today because, you know, you let your dish get destroyed. A decent number of pilots just got murdered.
Yeah. But they had to board it, right? Because if they had let him go, they would have never known. They now have a history of the ship, they have images of the ship. Yeah. Like, now create a trail of...
Well, I had this moment thinking, like, Luthen is so good at dissembling and deception, that, like, could he have just let them board him? But I think as I was thinking about it, I was like, now he is the person who says, I can't take the risk.
I am
too important. Like, and he's not like self-important, but he's like, I am the linchpin between all of these groups. And if I get taken out,
Saw's
we are screwed.
And Saw's right below me. They might be able to put that together.
Yeah, exactly.
That.
So I think he decides this is the only option, is I've got to sort of, you know, you play all my cards.
Oh, they'll also be able to realize, like, that's not a real transponder, and you're not actually Alderaan. It was an interesting, it was fun. I think it was just to see, like, how much Luthen has thought through every potential option to keep himself alive, and, like, he's constantly thinking through all the options. And you kind of see that when I don't think we really talked about the scene where he's down there with Saw and talking through, he thinks through all the options, and basically the only one he comes with is, like, I've got to be completely open and honest to Saw. That's the only way I can prevent Saw from going, also maintain Saw's trust, because I don't think he knows at that point whether or not Saw was going to go with Anton Krieger, because otherwise he wouldn't have to show up at all. But he needs to go there. Guys, confirm me here, but he goes there to make sure he's not going to Anton Krieger.
Well, he gets called in, and then Saw says, essentially, I'll do it. Like, give me all your stuff, all the stuff you promised. I'll go to Krieger. And he's got to talk him out of it.
I like that he's still Saw Gerrera, and he's like, I'm doing air support, and I'm not taking any orders. And I was like, does that work? Shouldn't there be some orders? He's still Saw Gerrera all the time, all day.
Also, there is a question of, like, I found that we didn't really, they don't go into this, but why does Saw change his mind? Like, he doesn't really answer that question. He talks about, like, Luthen's going to give me all this stuff, right, that he promised me. And you get the feeling, like, he needed the money or something. Like, he's like, yeah, turns out I need that. But I'm totally going to do this for the right reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Saw Gerrera is kind of a wild card, kind of a loose cannon, where he's going to change his mind, right? I mean, I think it's like Saw Gerrera wakes up one morning and decides, you know, I'm tired of sitting in this cave. It's time to do some stuff. This is an opportunity for me to put a hurt on the Empire. Let me go there. The one thing I think I noticed in their talk, when Luthen was talking to Lonnie, I believe it was Krieger and 50 men that are being sacrificed. I believe with Saw, it's Krieger and 30 men. So, when there's the truth.
When was the 50 men? When was the 50 men?
When he's in the lift with talking to Lonnie.
So
they're playing it up, right?
Yeah. Well, or playing it down to Saw. Yeah. It's just even when Luthen is like, all my cards on the table, it's still, what's 20 men here and there? You know?
Yeah. Did I say 20 and then 10?
Yeah.
Just Krieger. I also loved with the two of them together, both the script writing and the acting of basically getting Saw to realize that if they go there and the Empire knows that they're onto them, then they'll have as much fear and distrust in everyone as Saw has right then at that moment. And when he just, Luthen's like, oh, Tubes is giving me all this information. Tubes is like, what? What's going on? No, I don't know anything. So,
and he mainly does that. First of all, Tubes is the most, like, did George Lucas name this character? Like, did you sell the action figure before you thought about having to say the name? It's up there with Reese as horrible Star Wars alien names. Reese. But he does the, he does the thing where he's like, he implicates Tubes basically like as a joke to himself to get Tubes to get closer so he can, what, grab Tubes' gun or, they have a little tussle. Yeah, and you know, I mean, there is, this also shows us Saw Gerrera's kind of wild paranoia where he's like, oh, you're in the Ice Beam. He's like, if I was the Ice Beam, why would I be here? Why would we be having this conversation?
And, right. Well, and I think it's smart because Saw actually also demonstrates, you know, how intelligent he is because he points out either you're ISB or you're protecting a source in ISB. That's the only reason you would do this. And he's 100% right. Like, and it makes sense. Like, you could suss that out, I think, very easily at that point. And, you know, at that, Luthen, I think, tries gamely to be like, no, but, you know, okay, fine. Yeah, you got me. Like, and I think that, again, points to Luthen's knowledge of, like, how to work with all these disparate elements, right? And, like, the fact that when it comes to Saw, this is the only alternative.
And we do, after having Krieger mentioned several times, we are shown we're shown a picture of Krieger for the first time in this episode.
Don't get attached.
Where they're trying to show to determine if perhaps Krieger is who Bix has been meeting with. We know it's Luthen, not Krieger, but we're shown Krieger. It made me wonder. It's like, are we ever going to see Krieger in the show? I don't think so either. Right?
Some sort of like assistant executive assistant or something. Right? Yeah. They got their picture in there.
I wondered if it was like. The image looked, for some reason, I mean, I guess because it was a hologram, it looked somewhat CGI. I mean, I was like, is that a character from a video game that exists in canon or will exist in canon? Because I was like, do they actually even have an actor for that role? But yeah, my assumption is we don't see the failed raid on Spellhouse.
We get
a memo about it in an ISB meeting.
Yeah, I've seen that all along. I mean, this is a, I think it's also interesting, right? Because it also shows everybody looking. There's a fascinating duality to this because we're talking about like, okay, there's an armed squad of rebels and they're going to try to take out this Imperial power station. But that's not important. What's important is a bunch of stuff happening on this backwater planet where a funeral is going down, right? Yep. Like it's the
looking
stakes
for a
are
guy
very
who has absolutely not, who's like a one-time pilot who actually has nothing to do with the rebellion whatsoever, but he can recognize one other guy who is at the heart of everything.
Exactly. And I kind of love that where it's like, we're not even caring. We don't even care about the raid on Spellhouse because it doesn't, it doesn't matter for where our plot is going.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it kind of, for maybe wrapping up season one, if Krieger dies in this raid, which it seems likely he will, maybe, and the ISB thinks that that was the mastermind of the Aldani heist.
Interesting.
Then they can kind of like, oh, well, we've solved that problem, close that file, or not. Or and maybe Miro doesn't agree with that conclusion, or...
I'm still waiting to see if they get the video files from... from the prison break and wait, like this Cleef character, he looks pretty familiar.
That's right.
So,
the
we'll
irony.
See.
Also, what's happening with Cassian's sister? We're still no.
Yeah,
I don't think we're coming back to that point.
I guess not. Maybe next season. Yeah, so we got one episode left. Any other plots from this that we want to need to address, or did we kind of...
I just don't know how they're going to wrap up everything in 40 minutes, right? Like, the show...
Oh, the last episode's like 4 hours long.
Yeah, that'll do it.
I mean, there's all
it
the
is,
other
this was. I mean, this was an incredible... I think this was one of the shorter episodes. I think this was like 45 minutes and incredibly dense.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is, I don't know, the pacing of the show is always interesting to me. And it was, you know, this is maybe a separate conversation for next episode. But there's, I guess there's the weird thing to me where there are, I guess the ratings or viewership for Andor is not very high, which is weird to me because it's so good. There are some, I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus, but there are some incomparable people who are Star Wars fans who like, oh, I bounced off it after an episode or two. And it's like, what is going it's on, so good. People? You know,
yeah, I think a rating stuff doesn't,
I know
it matters for streaming, but A, you can't really know, and B, it doesn't really matter, and C, I think Disney and Lucasfilm is smart enough to know, like, the reviews of this are categorically, like,
sure,
probably the best reviews.
Yeah, I think the question is, like, what is the purpose of this show? I mean, A, you want, from a pure like marketing business perspective, right? Yes, you want to show the Star Wars fans who are like us, we will go see any Star Wars movie. Again, I saw The Phantom Menace 7 times in theaters. Like, I'll see anything that they produce.
Apparently.
Yeah. But then the question of trying to get more dedicated viewers of Star Wars and, like, turning those sort of, like, peripheral Star Wars fans into hardcore fans who will consume more media, or getting new people to watch Star Wars. And this is actually a show that I would get people who don't watch Star Wars, like, come check out the show. Star Wars isn't just like droids and kids and pod racers. It's a legitimately good show about, like,
politics
and empire. If you like House of Cards, like this.
I believe it is going to be available both, like, the first couple episodes are going to be on Hulu.
Oh,
and I think they're
smart.
Actually airing them on ABC.
Oh, wow.
Like, for sometime exciting. In the next week, I want to say they're airing some of that. Because, well, I think they are going to try to hit a bigger audience.
Because you actually thought about recommending this to your mom.
Yeah, actually, I did. Because, I mean, she's watched some sci-fi stuff. She's not, you know, certainly she's seen Star Wars, but she's not, like, a Star Wars fan.
But she likes mysteries and dramas.
Like, yeah, exactly. And I think, like, this show does cross genres pretty well to, like, make it appeal to people who aren't necessarily diehard fans of a franchise. And I think that's a big thing for Star Wars, right? And I think we'll probably talk more about this next week when we've got sort of the whole season under our belt. But, like, the future of Star Wars TV shows, I think this is a really interesting data point and something that I think is going to be, it's going to be interesting to see how Disney and Lucasfilm react to this in developing future projects.
I still want my romantic comedy Christmas special, like a Christmas Prince, but Star Wars. Please make that happen.
Day. A castle
but
for
like
life
a
day.
Good one, like a good Christmas romantic comedy.
I just get nervous, I guess, because the length of this is so different from the other Star Wars shows. That's what makes me nervous, where this is a 12 episode season, and maybe I have no cause for concern, because maybe that, you know, they've said it's a 2-season show and they've already budgeted 12 episodes or however many Tony Gilroy wants for that next season, and, you know, and then they're out. It makes me nervous that it's like, is this getting whatever numbers they need in their horrible equation for how much it costs compared to, say, an Obi-Wan or Book of Boba Fett or Mandalorian, which are much shorter seasons,
and
right?
Probably in some cases cheaper, because they shot a lot of those on the volume. And this is a lot of this shot on sets and locations.
It's tricky. I mean, you know, They love the volume, and it's like the stuff they do with the volume is great and impressive, but also I don't want it used for everything, because there is a sameness to the techniques, and you can cut. I mean, it's real impressive. I think I almost feel ruined from watching all of the making of stuff, where it's now I know how the magic trick works, and so I see it in all these places where I wouldn't have seen it normally.
Sure. I make it. It's conducive to telling a certain kind of story and scale. Where I think works fine. I mean, I don't want to, you know, knock The Mandalorian, because it's a show I really enjoy. I thought Obi-Wan was done well, but this definitely has a different feel to it. And I don't know how that affects things going forward. All right, any last thoughts before we wrap up here?
I thought we had maybe one or two emails you might want to reference from
our
listeners.
We had a couple other nice emails, which I wanted to just call out.
Thank you for everyone who writes in. They're delightful when we get them.
A very nice email from listener Brian and from listener Tom. We really appreciate it. Thanks for sending in your messages. We're glad you're enjoying the show, and appreciate you sharing all your Star Wars experiences with us. So feel free, of course, to write us a letter, acp@theincomparable.com. Or ACP underscore cast on a social media network that shall not be named.
What's our Mastodon handle?
I don't have Mastodon handles.
I don't know how.
Same. It's basically the same.
Let's just go back to Twitter or to email. Yeah, you can email us.
Or email us.
Google Wave. Yeah. Google Wave. I love Google Wave. I was the only person who loved Google Wave.
Cat's out there reading Google Wave, eating her squigs. Like, all right. Well, there's one episode left in this season. I think we're all really excited to see how it ends. And of course, we will be back to discuss it next week. But until then, I would, of course, like to thank my co-hosts for being here. Cat Benish. Always a pleasure.
It's been fun, guys.
Tony Sindelar, thank you for being here.
Goodbye, nerds.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you next week. But until then, we remind you, may the force be with you.